Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I'm Bob Enyart. Today is our first installment on our annual list of answers to hydroplate objections. Now, Dr. Walt Brown is the favorite scientist of us here at Real Science Radio, Fred Williams and I. And you may realize, of course, that Dr. Walt Brown's theory, the hydroplate theory, explaining the mechanisms of the global flood, he devised this many years ago, decades ago, has been presenting it for a long, long time. And not all creationists agree with Dr. Brown. Now, if you ask three rabbis a question, you get how many answers? Four. You get four answers. So that's not surprising with young earth creationists, right? We are biblical creationists, yet we can differ on many particulars. Walt Brown's work has gained tremendous popularity among many creation scientists, among rank-and-file creationists, pastors, homeschool curriculum publishers, Bible students. Yet, if Walt's model of the global flood is accurate, right? Think about if it's accurate. Then many of the claims of the other creation groups, the claims that they have championed, including, say, ICR, the Institute for Creation Research, their catastrophic plate tectonics model and their canopy theory, which Henry Morris used to promote, answers in Genesis on their frozen mammoth explanation and their ice age model, for example. Many of those particulars will be seen to be incorrect if Walt Brown's hydroplate theory is correct. And as a practical result, because of the popularity of Walt Brown's website, and because his hydroplate theory that he presents in a book that we offer at our store here at realscienceradio.com, you just click on the store and you could get In the Beginning by Dr. Walt Brown, because it's one of the best-selling creationist books, if not the bestseller, 150,000 copies in print. Well, either Walt Brown has held back the progress of creation science, if he's wrong, he has done that, or the creationists who've opposed Walt's hydroplate theory, they have held back the progress. So Real Science Radio here, we would ask everyone involved in this issue to extend grace to everyone else as we conduct our own investigation into the objections to the hydroplate theory, which theory we ourselves hold. We think that this is the best model for the global flood. Now, for this initial program, and perhaps we'll do this more than once a year, but we have our annual programs like our list of not-so-old things, our list of dinosaur soft tissue program, our list of genomes that just don't fit, and so on. For this initial program on our list of answers to hydroplate objections, we will consider three objections from somewhat well-known creationists. And they are one from John Baumgartner. He was for 20 years with Los Alamos National Labs. He's now with ICR. And he says that Walt is wrong about the ability of granite in the crust of the earth to generate voltages. He says Walt is wrong about that, so we'll look at that. And then Dr. Don Patton. Don Patton, he's excavated the 500-foot-long dinosaur track in North America, longest in North America, amazing trackway. He's exposed the fraudulent ark find on Mount Ararat. He's one of the leading explorers searching for Noah's Ark on Mount Ararat. He's long made a claim about Walt Brown and limestone formation. So we'll look at that claim. And then Danny Faulkner, I had astronomer Danny Faulkner on this program just a few weeks ago, longtime University of South Carolina astronomer, now with AIG, Answers in Genesis. And he wrote a paper recently criticizing Walt indirectly, directly, about the 360-day year, which Walt Brown's theory suggests why the Earth would have had a 360-day year originally, and now it's 365. And also that the lunar month, the month got messed up from exactly 30-day month to now 29 and a half days from new moon to new moon. Okay, so let's begin with John Baumgartner. Now, Dr. Baumgartner, as I said, I mean, an alumnus with Los Alamos National Labs. He's a pretty sharp guy. He got his PhD in geophysics from UCLA. And in a 2011 author-to-author critique in a publication called Flood Science Review, Dr. Walt Brown and other flood scientists, many were involved in this. It turns out it's a 1,600-page book, Flood Science Review. And in an author-to-author critique, Dr. John Baumgartner argued that Walt Brown, now he gave many criticisms, and we're going to look at one of those. He argued that Walt Brown had to be wrong about the ability of granite to produce gigavoltages. That's one of the aspects to Walt's theory, is that when the fountains of the great deep broke forth, the crust of the earth sitting on a subterranean chamber of water that encircled the globe about 10 miles or more deep, that the crust of the earth went through so much pressure that it produced tremendous voltages, gigavoltages. And Dr. Baumgartner, being a geophysicist, he said, well, Dr. Brown is wrong about that. That can't happen. And I have a quote here. He said, there is no observational evidence that the quartz crystals in granite have ever been aligned as Brown postulates. Now, let me explain that. If you take quartz crystal and if you compress it, you'll get a voltage. And if you pull on it, so put a tension pull on it, you'll get a minus voltage, a positive or negative, based on whether you push or pull. So granite has a lot of quartz. In fact, 1/4, a quarter of granite is quartz. So imagine if you compress, like put pressure on a huge chunk of North America. If there's quartz in the granite, which there is, then you could generate a tremendous amount of electricity if the quartz crystals are aligned to some degree. If they're just all in random orientations, then all those micro mini electrical fields, they'll all cancel each other out. You're not going to produce gigavoltages. But if they're somehow aligned, then you could produce tremendous voltages when you put pressure on the crust of the earth. So John Baumgartner criticizes in this way Walt Brown's hydroplate theory, says there is no observational evidence that quartz crystals have ever been aligned, meaning that you're not going to get gigavolts out of the crust of the earth if you compress it or pull on it. I'll now report to you a lot of evidence that, in fact, enormous voltages come out of the crust of the earth when it's under pressure. And we'll start with National Geographic reporting this year, 2013, about the electrical currents produced by earthquake tremors. And so if, in fact, earthquake tremors produce massive electrical currents, then the question is, well, why would that be? You know, you take sandstone and you squish it, you don't get voltages. Take all kinds of rock, and what are you going to do with it to generate an electrical current? But with granite, because it has quartz in it, that appears to be the smoking gun. If, in fact, earthquakes produce massive electrical fields, then that's the smoking gun, we believe, here at Real Science Radio. So here's what National Geographic reported this year. And on our website at realscienceradio.com, We'll give you the links to all of our sources. They wrote, these currents are huge. Now, they're speaking about the electrical currents produced by earthquake tremors. That's the topic of the article. They said, these currents are huge. They're on the order of 100,000 amperes for a magnitude 6 earthquake and a million amperes for a magnitude 7. Quote, it's almost like lightning underground. Now, that almost sounds like it comes right out of Dr. Walt Brown's book from a few years ago. And that's this year, 2013. Now, if you're going to produce a million amps for a magnitude 7 earthquake, that's what? That's enough electricity to kill, what, a few million people. That's a lot of electricity. It's enough electricity to power, let's say, 10,000 homes if your home has a 100-amp breaker panel. Right? 10,000 homes. That's a lot of electricity. From here's this momentary earthquake, and you get all this electrical current. Now, an earthquake prediction researcher with a firm in Cambridge, Massachusetts, this firm has funded something they call Quake Finder. One of their researchers was quoted in that National Geographic article. Now, it turns out that there's all kinds of evidence that earthquakes cause a major disturbance in magnetic electrical field. I'll give you three examples. One, beginning some years ago, scientists have noticed that up in the ionosphere, before an earthquake happens, they notice a disturbance in the ionosphere over the epicenter. And this has happened now repeatedly. And it's happened so much so, in fact, the UK has entered into a joint project with Russia, and it's called TwinSat. It's at the University College London's Space Lab, their Mullard Space Lab, where they are attempting to predict earthquakes by launching satellites to monitor the ionosphere. Now, a couple of years back, some scientists said, oh, that's probably not going to work. It's just a coincidence. But still, again, in 2013, I'm looking right now at an abstract from a presentation at the European Geophysical Union. And this scientist reports on the continued research that before earthquakes, there's a disturbance in the ionosphere. Now, why would that be? Well, if Walt Brown's theory is correct, tremendous pressure on the crust of the earth causes electrical currents as a result of the crystals in the granite. And so there is another bit of evidence. There is also another project where a privately funded firm has a global project to monitor electromagnetic emissions along fault lines. So far, they have thousands of monitoring devices in California, in Peru, in Taiwan, in Greece, and they're building their global network constantly. And they are noticing that before tremors, there is some kind of a disturbance in the electromagnetic emissions from the Earth. They want to know why. There's another piece of really interesting information. This comes from Germany, and a researcher, I have looked at her report, and it's really a shocking report. And they've been monitoring in Germany along fault lines. There are these massive redwood ant mounds, ants. And these ant mounds, they have noticed. Now, this wasn't their goal. This was just coincidental. And this was reported at the European Geosciences Union, their annual meeting in Vienna in April of 2013, they noticed that before an earthquake, 24 hours before an earthquake, ants evacuate their mounds. They get out. They go up on the surface where they're now vulnerable to predator. They could be eaten pretty easily. And this doesn't happen with one mound, or it didn't happen occasionally. It's a consistent pattern. And they say, you know, we don't know why these ants are evacuating their mounds before an earthquake, but something is warning them. And you know, and I know, if there's going to be an earthquake, you don't want to be in a tight enclosed tunnel underground. That's probably someplace you'd rather not be. And the ants agree. So it turns out that these researchers looking at this, they're saying, you know, we really don't know what is causing these ants to be able to predict tremors, but it could be a few other things, including that it could be these ants have some kind of an ability to sense a change in the Earth's local magnetic field, and there's something going on there. That, I think, is fascinating. From the Discovery Institute, the intelligent design folks, Dr. Stephen Meyer, who we've just interviewed, his book, Darwin's Doubt. And interestingly, at the Discovery Institute, the intelligent design folks there, they're against Darwin, but they support an old Earth, unfortunately. They have a scientist, Dr. Stephen Meyer, and his new book is called Darwin's Doubt. And in his book, in fact, on page 280, he has a section on organisms, how ion channels in electromagnetic fields affect them at a fundamental level. Back in the 1990s, there was a Nobel Prize winning scientist who discovered an ion pump in the cell membrane of cells, where they pump out three ions for every two they pump in, and it creates an electromagnetic field across the cell membrane. And they realized that a disturbance, an electrical field disturbance, affects the cells and affects the organism. So little by little, we're finding out more and more about how creatures that God designed are able to sense the electromagnetic field. So it could very well be that all of this evidence that there is an electrical disturbance in the crust of the Earth during tremors is the smoking gun that Walt Brown's theory is correct, and that during the global flood, tremendous voltages were generated. Okay, so that's responding to Dr. John Baumgartner. He makes many other criticisms of the hydroplate theory. That one seemed to be especially significant, and so we thought we'd address that in our first show, our list of answers to hydroplate objections. Secondly, then, is Dr. Don Patton. Now, Dr. Patton, for some years, he's been on this show a number of times, including in studio. I've traveled with Dr. Patton doing research, going out in the field and looking at fossils. Dr. Patton has made claims about Walt Brown's hydroplate theory for quite a long time. I talked to him about this claim, one particular claim, recently, and he said this. He's been telling people, I heard from others that he had said this to, and he had said this to me also, that, well, Dr. Brown must be wrong because he claims that limestone, the limestone deposits all over the world, like in the Grand Canyon, 500-foot thick red wall limestone, that limestone deposits fell out of the atmosphere. They precipitated out of the atmosphere during the flood. And he said that is utterly impossible. It is not conceivable. So Walt Brown is just wrong. He's a nice guy. He's just wrong. So here's what I did. I knew that from the 7th edition of Walt Brown's book and the 8th edition, both of which I've read cover to cover, that Walt Brown didn't say anything like that. He has a whole chapter on limestone. And so I went to one of our Real Science Radio researchers, and I said, could you get every edition of Dr. Brown's book from the first edition, which is hard to get, through to the 6th, and then we'll include the 7th, the 8th, and the online material. Let's exhaustively look at everything Dr. Brown has published. Is it possibly true that he ever said this, because it's just not imaginable, but let's check. And so we did the research. It took weeks, and Dr. Brown never said such a thing. So then I contacted Walt Brown, and I asked him, Dr. Brown, have you ever taught or indicated anything like this? And he said, no, you know, we've been so open. Here's our chapter on limestone. It's online. It's not very long. And so I brought that information back to Dr. Don Patton, and to his credit, He thanked us here at Real Science Radio for doing the research. He thanked me. He said, not only am I glad you told me, I needed to know that I was wrong so that I could stop misinforming people. And so I wanted to pass that on to you, that I appreciate Dr. Patton being so forthright about that. You know, sometimes when we're wrong, we easily dig in. And so he did not. And I admired that. Now, Dr. John Baumgartner, if he retracts his statement that there is no evidence that quartz crystals have ever been aligned, and so Dr. Brown must be wrong that the crust can produce gigavoltages, maybe he could retract that because there's tremendous evidence. In fact, in Dr. Walt Brown's book, there's a section called Earthquakes and Electricity. And in that section, he documents from the USGS, United States Geological Society, and many other sources, worldwide accounts of electrical currents being generated by earthquakes. And so that's been in Walt's book since 2010. And John Baumgartner's critique was written in 2011. So I think that maybe Dr. Baumgartner could retract just that one claim that there's no evidence to support Walt's theory in that regard. Okay. Oh, and by the way, let me add another Real Science Radio prediction. The prediction is that for all the scientists who are saying that earthquake prediction will not be possible by studying the ionosphere, we predict here that it will be possible, that that research will come to fruition. Okay, the last, the third, our list of answers to hydroplate objections. The last objection came from astronomer Danny Faulkner. As I said, I recently had Danny on this show, longtime University of South Carolina astronomer, now full-time with the Creation Museum. And he wrote an article published in the CRSQ, the Creation Research Society Quarterly, challenging the claim that there was once a 360-day year. It's known in the creation community that many of those, like at the Creation Science Hall of Fame, for example, many of those creationists who believe the Earth once had a 360-day year, they are supporters of Dr. Walt Brown's hydroplate theory because his theory helps us see how the year changed from 360 to 365. Now, Dr. Faulkner, in his paper, I'll describe it in thirds. The first third of his paper defines many astronomical terms, in fact, dozens of them. It's a long section of his paper. And when you read it, you're just astounded that there's so many complex issues that you have to be aware of in order to figure out what the calendar is. You just want to know how many days in a month, how many months in a year, how many days in a year. That's it. And there are dozens of issues. Like, I'll just give you a partial list. You got to figure out a sidereal year, a tropical year, a vernal equinox, an ecliptic, a celestial equator, an autumnal equinox, precession of the equinoxes, the animalistic year, perihelion, perihelion precession, sidereal month, synodic month, nodal month. You get the idea? It goes on like that for page after page. At the end, Dr. Faulkner says the reason it's so complicated is that there's no single way of working out the calendar that actually works. So all cultures throughout history, everybody wrestled with it. They all did it differently. I mean, he says that. So that's the first third. And then in the second third, he immediately says that creationists are wrong to say that there is no easy way to figure out the calendar. Because we creationists, we read in Genesis where God says, I'm giving you signs in the heavens for seasons and days and years. So the signs in the heavens help us keep track of seasons and days and years. And that's exactly what the whole world has been confused about for thousands of years, is the seasons keep moving through the calendar. The days don't match the years. The months don't match the days, what's going on? It's all confusing. So for Dr. Faulkner to have this definition section showing how complicated it is, and then in the beginning of a second section on what the Bible might say about the calendar, he says, look, it's unreasonable to say that there's not a good system in the heavens for keeping a calendar. So I don't think he can have it both ways. And Dr. Faulkner, he did mention Daniel. He didn't mention Revelation, where you look in Revelation and you see a 3.5 year period expressed in the number of months, 42 months, and in the number of days, 1,260 days. And you realize that these are indicators of exactly 360 day years. And so it seems that the Bible is a rather powerful argument for saying that God has in his mind an earth year of 360 days, and that he made it that way so it's easy for us to figure out the months and the years. So Dr. Faulkner then goes on to say that, well, if some creationist would propose a mechanism for changing the number of days in the length of a lunar month, then maybe we could evaluate it, but no one has ever proposed the mechanism. And I have to say, I love Dr. Faulkner. I've had him in studio, interviewed him recently. But when I read that, I almost fell out of my chair, and I had a seatbelt on, and I was flying in a plane to Phoenix to see Walt Brown while I was reading that. Because Walt Brown's hydroplate theory, it has a mechanism that explains exactly how the Earth would speed up to get another 5 days a year, and how the orbit of the moon would be slightly disturbed so that we no longer have a 30-day year. It's when the fountains of the great deep burst forth and rock and water from deep inside the Earth was shot out into the atmosphere, and some of it reached escape velocity and impacted the moon and also Mars and Venus and so on, and formed the comets and the asteroids. And so when that happened, part of the inner Earth melted. That sped up the Earth's rotation. And the impacts on the moon were so severe that it changed its orbital rotation by about half a day. And so Walt Brown does propose a mechanism, and it really is somewhat counterproductive to tell all the scientists and the leaders in the movement who read the CRSQ that no one has ever proposed the mechanism. So those are our first three answers to hydroplate objections, and we hope that that helps bring the discussion forward as to Walt Brown's theory and whether or not it is reliable. We think it is, but we'll take all challenges here at Real Science Radio. Please check out the website, realscienceradio.com, and especially our store. You can make a donation or purchase a product that'll really help us. Hey, this is Bob Inyart for Real Science Radio. May God bless you.
Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real. That's what I'm talking about.